ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः।
Hare Krishna, dear devotees and guests. I'm so happy to be back here in ISKCON Toronto. It's very heartfelt whenever we visit here and have the opportunity to be with you. I first offer my obeisances to my spiritual masters, Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, and to all of you who are present here today. You're great souls. And when a lot of great souls get together in one place, creates a very powerful energy so that one can progress in life, because life is meant for progress, especially human life. Everyone's always looking for ways to better themselves. And fortunately, there's good instruction available. On the material side, if anyone applies themselves with knowledge and practice, they can improve. And on the spiritual side also, there's sufficient knowledge and reliable practice that's been chalked out by previous teachers that one can follow and then make progress in life. So this organization, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, is meant for such progress. In the Sri Upanishad, there's a verse that says, Vidyam cha vidyam cha yas tad vedo bayam saha avidya yamritum tirtva vidya yamritum ashyate. That only one who can learn the process of transcendental knowledge and nescience side by side can transcend the influence of repeated birth and death and enjoy the full blessings of immortality. We already have a little taste of what it's like to live in the material world, so no one has to cultivate that very much. So the Sri Upanishad suggests that side by side with one's inevitable interaction with the material energy, which is described in great detail in the Vedic scriptures, but which we don't have time to go into tonight because there's an exhaustive amount of information about the anomalies in this world and all the things that can go wrong, but I'm sure you're all aware of those from your own lives. Next to that, if one sets up for oneself, especially the world in very particular ways, this is an indication of the continuum that I'm on. And that doesn't go away easily or by the snap of a finger. It's a very deep kind of conditioning. And spiritual life is very serious practice, actually. But it's very powerful. At the same time, it can actually help one to justify the two parts of one's life. The inevitable interaction with the material nature, which is endlessly troubling, and one's craving for something more satisfying than whatever one gets through one's exhaustive endeavors in the material world. The Bhagavad Gita gives the answer that the craving is for a connection, a deep connection with our Supreme Divine Source, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And once my spiritual master, the founder Acharya of ISKCON, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, gave a very simple example that I have been thinking about lately a lot, and which is a kind of bridge to understand the importance of a spiritual process, which we sometimes call yoga. It comes from the Sanskrit word yuj, which means to reconnect. In English, we have the word yoke. And sometimes you yoke together bulls, for example, who till the field, they're connected. So yoga means connection. And he said that it's like a little tiny screw. It's insignificant by itself. But when it's connected to its real purpose, it's got a duty to do, and when it's doing that duty, then it's highly significant. And I went for a walk today, around 4 o'clock this afternoon with my dear friend and godbrother Gaurav Prabhu. And we're just coming down the street. What is this street?
Roxborough.
We're walking down Roxborough Street, and just as we were coming in the last maybe 200 yards or so, I just happened to see on the ground, they still have it. You may not be able to see this from right there, but it's a tiny little screw. And remembering it's an annoyance, it's some kind of litter, but I picked it up and Gaurav Prabhu and I were looking at it, and as I looked at it more, I thought, it has a lot of potential, because if I actually use this for something, then it could hold up a picture, it could hold together a bookshelf, it could hold a machine together that does life-saving work. There's unlimited things that it could do, and I was thinking, it looks like such a simple thing, and it also looks insignificant, but it is extremely potential. And this is what Srila Prabhupada said was the situation of one who is not in yoga or in connection with the Supreme Divine Source through actions, through words, through some kind of practice. One becomes incomplete. One feels incomplete as well, because one isn't fully utilizing one's potential. And I was thinking, what is a screw for other than service? If it's not serving somewhere, if it's not helping something, then it really isn't very important. So in the same way, yoga, with even a little practice, just like with a screw, as soon as it's connected, it feels satisfied again, if I may personify the screw, because I was feeling a little sorry for it. Carried it in my pocket. Keep it with me. In a similar way, even with a tiny endeavor in yoga, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Neha bikrama nasho sti pratyavayo navidite swapam apyasa dharmasya traite mahato bhayat. He says in the Sanskrit word, swapam apyasa dharmasya. If you just do a tiny bit of practice in spiritual life, you will feel the connection and you'll feel satisfied for yourself and you'll know it. It's a direct experience. So there are several practices in bhakti which are primary. And one of them is the process of repeating the names of our Supreme Divine Source, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's an interesting science, one that I think we can relate to, because there's a way in which we're familiar with the importance of names in this world. For instance, presumably we all have names here, correct?
Yeah.
And we may have more than one name besides our given name and our family name and maybe our, you know, our middle name, like a nickname. Anyone? Thank you. One person volunteered. He's the most forthcoming of all people I've ever known. Because of that, I'm not going to ask him his nickname, because you want us to know. Krishnas Kaviraj Prabhu, what is your nickname? Ketchup. Yeah, give him a little love for that. Only one person in this whole assembly hall raised their hand to give their nickname, and it's Krishnas Kaviraj. I mean, you will not meet a more soft-hearted soul. So his name is Ketchup. So if this exalted soul happened to be walking, let's say in, where's the most obscure place you can think of in the world? The North Pole. Okay, let's say he was walking in the North Pole, and he was going by some igloos, and somebody leaned outside the igloo and said, "Hey, Ketchup!" What would you do? You'd be really surprised. How did somebody know my name? Not just my name, but my nickname. It's a very intimate thing. Maybe you got it from your mom or your friends or who knows where, but it's very intimate. So in the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu 500 years ago, explicated the science of bhakti yoga in such a simple way that people all around the world could take it up and then reconnect through their practice of bhakti, which is comprised of this science of repeating the names of God, but not just any names, very special, intimate names of God. So in the mantra that we chant, and it's really a valuable asset to have a mantra. I was with my wife, Neera Kula, recently. We were meeting some official person, and we were having a discussion about some paperwork, and we were going through various aspects of, it's actually financial planning. And in that process, he mentioned, do you remember the incident? That, I was talking about nicknames. Oh, right, and the mantra, thank you. And he was asking about our lives and said, oh, you two seem very spiritual in your responses. And she said, oh, yeah, you know, we have a mantra. And I thought about that when we left. I was thinking, that's an interesting person. It's an interesting thing to tell someone. It's like, yeah, we have a mantra. And then I thought about it over the next week, and I thought, I really feel fortunate to have a mantra. Someone gave me a mantra. You hear about mantras here and there, but somebody actually gives you a mantra and you have a mantra, then it's an important thing. It's one of the most important assets that you can have in life. So what's in a mantra? Well, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said everything. You can find everything in the mantra. So one of the things he said was, Nam Namakari Bahuda Nija Sarva Shaktis. And that means that God is personally present in his names. And in the science of the name, there are primary names and there's secondary names. The primary names mean the nicknames or the very intimate names of God. Of course, that leads to a lot of other investigation in science. And one can do that through reading many of these books, like Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's biography called Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Now, he said, when you repeat the name, you're associating directly with God, and you'll also feel that immediate connection to him. So one of the practices that he taught, he walked all over India, especially the south, barefoot. And he went from village to village, and he would gather people together, just like we're gathered here today. And then he would teach them a simple process for a home practice of this bhakti yoga, for an immediate connection with the Supreme Personality of God, through which one will feel one's full potential immediately by chanting. And he taught everyone to repeat this particular mantra, which is found in the Kali Santarana Upanishad, which we know nowadays as the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, and which he also received from his teacher. He received a mantra. His teacher was Srila Ishwarapuri. He gave him the mantra. And just a side note, when he received the mantra through initiation, he came back to his spiritual master a while later and he said, did you give me the right mantra? The spiritual master said, why are you asking? He said, because I think it's driving me crazy. He became so joyful upon chanting it, he wasn't responsible for his own actions anymore. Have you ever been so happy that you didn't care who was watching? You started singing or dancing? Well, he became like that all the time from chanting this mantra. So he went back to his spiritual master to check in and say, is this the right mantra? Am I doing something wrong? And the spiritual master said, no, that's right, it's correct. Because the first symptom of contacting Krishna through a spiritual practice is that one feels joyful. How joyful? So joyful that you can overcome all the other various obstacles that may seem to be plaguing your life right now. Anybody have any of those, by the way? Please say yes.
Yes.
Thank you. It makes me feel a lot better. And so he would go in an assembly, whether small or large, he didn't care. He went from person to person to spread a network of teachings of this bhakti yoga And he taught people to chant simple mantra together. And also, he showed by example how to chant it in one's individual practice at home. So now I'm going to show you a simple way that you can do it at home. Please hold up your right hand. Now, first take a look at your hand and notice what you may have never noticed before. You may have reached the ripe age of 22, 46, 57 and never actually looked at your hand. That's possible. But look at it now, the palm, and see that it has little segments on the fingers. Do you notice that? Do you know why those are there? It's for chanting. Are you fishing? God gave you those so that you can chant. And you'll learn how to count if you follow me. Place your thumb on the middle segment of your ring finger. Can you see that? And say Krishna one. Please hold up your hands. Hold it right there. Now move it down to the bottom of your ring finger. Say Krishna two. Bottom of your little finger. Say Krishna three. The middle of your little finger. Say Krishna four. Top of your little finger. Say Krishna five. Top of your ring finger, say Krishna 6. Top of your middle finger, say Krishna 7. Top of your index finger, say Krishna 8. Middle of your index finger, say Krishna 9. Bottom of your index finger, say Krishna 10. Now we'll do it together, kind of rapidly. Are you ready? Krishna 1, Krishna 2, Krishna 3, Krishna 4, Krishna 5, Krishna 6, Krishna 7, Krishna 8. Krishna 9, Krishna 10. So now you know you can count tens on this. And on your other hand, if you have one, you can count the multiples of 10 that you chant. So let's try it together. This is called japa. Japa means that process by which you can overcome all obstacles in this world, including death and rebirth. So powerful. Worth the investment of time. Japa. Everyone say japa.
Japa.
So when you go out of here and somebody grabs by the arm and say, what was that guy talking about in there? You'll say?
Japa.
Japa. So according to Hanuman Prashekha Swami, japa, so you can remember, it also means jaw, because you're going to use your jaw to chant, and pa, this is your paw. So the bear has a paw. Okay, so japa. Okay, so now you can put your thumb on the beginning section. Got it? Okay, what we're going to do is try chanting the Maha Mantra, and if anybody doesn't know the mantra, please raise your hand and we'll bring you a card so that you can look at it. Or is it written somewhere here in the temple room? Okay, so anybody that doesn't know the mantra, raise your hand. First I'll say it. It goes like this. Just repeat after me. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Krishna Krishna.
Krishna Krishna.
Hare Hare.
Hare Hare.
Hare Rama.
Hare Rama.
Hare Rama.
Hare Rama.
Rama Rama.
Rama Rama.
Hare Hare.
Hare Hare.
Got it? Okay. So let's chant together, and we'll do it in unison, and we'll do 10 mantras together. And I'll teach you 3 ways to improve your home practice of meditation on this mantra. The first one is, from wherever situation you're in right now, sit up just a little bit straighter. And now see, when you did that, I suddenly thought, wow, they're even more interested than they were before. And if you go to an interview anytime, and you sit in front of the interviewee like this, they won't hire you. But if you sit up straight, even if you say stupid stuff, they'll say this person is hired. Because when you sit up straight, everyone, including your mind and your body, takes it seriously. That's the first one. The second one is pronunciation. There are 16 words, 32 syllables in this mantra. It's a very even number. So if you pronounce each mantra and listen to yourself pronounce it, then you'll be very aware that you're chanting. And the object of meditation is to be aware that you're aware. Don't let your mind do double duty, because it's possible to ride in a train and miss all the stops because you're reading a book, or read a book and then miss your stop because you're not paying attention. There's a lot of ways that we can be absent, present at the same time. So meditation really means to be present and know that you're present. Because animals are present, but they don't know they're present. But human beings are present, but they can know that they're present. So just know that you're present and be present for the holy name of God while you chant it. And if you just do that one thing, you'll have perfect meditation. And the last point, I'm giving three pointers for your home practice, is to use prayer. And a lot of people use it nowadays, they don't know they're using it. I was walking by a high school recently near our home, and there was a group of girls standing there, and when I walked by, they were saying, "Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God." And this is what we're saying also. But we say it with presence and full meaning, because the Hare Krishna mantra means, "Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God." Hare Krishna means, "Oh my God, oh my Lord, oh Krishna." And we're saying very personal names of the Lord. And so it's a natural thing for everyone when they experience anything that's unusual or wonderful or distressful in this world, just to say, "Oh my God," because what else can we do? I'm a helpless entity if I really think about it. So if you can transport yourself to a place of helplessness before you start chanting and really mean it when you say, "Oh my God," think of all the reasons you have right now to say, "Oh my God." Can you think about it? Does he have at least one reason to say, "Oh my God"? Yes, okay. So now we'll chant together with these three things in mind, starting with your thumb, which is your main counting instrument. We have opposable thumbs. Monkeys can't do this, I don't think. Or certainly reptiles. Monkeys can. Who can? Cats can't do it. They have paws. Well, they have jaw paw, I don't know. Okay, let's see. Let's start here, all together. Are you ready? Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama.
For 10 seconds and feel how the vibration has penetrated your whole body. Your respiratory system is purified. This includes the breathing that you're doing when you chant. And the vibration goes through all the various stratum in your body, strata, and goes all the way to the spiritual being, who we are inside, and it touches that. And it reaches to the spiritual realm. This mantra comes from a higher realm. So one can realize this. And this is the essence of the yoga practice that we teach here at the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. We recommend that you start a home practice. And there's one other aspect to the practice that I highly recommend, but if you'll allow me, I'm going to look at my watch because I can't see that clock. May I? I don't want to insult you by looking at my watch while I'm sitting here, but if I have your permission, I can look really quick. Are you ready? I diverted my attention from you, and I apologize. Now I know what time it is, because I don't want to go over time. So, the second very fundamental practice, which will transport you on your spiritual journey to the highest destination, is to read the Bhagavad Gita. And if I may have a copy, because I'm feeling a little jumpy right now without having a copy up here. I like to keep one close. I was nearby. Okay, thank you. Now I got two. That's the way spiritual life works. If you have some spiritual desire, Krishna doubles it, he doubles down. One of his names is Vanchatita. Everyone say Vanchatita. This is a name of Krishna, which means that he fulfills your desires more than you could expect. In your wildest imagination of how to fulfill your desire, he can do it much, much better. And he also is named Hari. Everyone say Hari.
Hari.
He's also expert at taking away your material desires that actually run you into a ditch. And sometimes we may complain because we think, like, why is he taking everything away? No, he's doing us a favor. So if you read Bhagavad Gita, like one verse, two verses, minimum every day, then you'll find a direct communion with our divine source, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because, and even if this sounds far-fetched, please suspend your disbelief even for one moment. This is spoken by the personality who creates everything, who's the origin of everything, who's all benevolent and all powerful at the same time. And his words are recorded in this book. That's our premise. Now, if you think about that premise for a moment, and then you sit down and read this book with an open mind, you'll find that there's an unusual communion that you have with a voice that you recognize as something of an old friend, as something that's very deep and moving, the same kind of voice that you may hear sometimes within your own heart, advising you to do what's right. And when you develop a relationship with this book, many of the other aspirations that one may have in this world, which one may know are actually substandard and even abhorrent, begin to fade away because of the interest in this book. And it first starts to act on one's intelligence. And Krishna mentions in this book that if you read it regularly, it will purify your intelligence. When you have a purified intelligence, you can make better decisions. And when you make better decisions, your life will go in a prosperous way. And all that's required is you take a little time to open it and just start reviewing some of the verses, and you can read the purports to get a clear explanation of what the verses mean. And if you combine that with your daily chanting at home of the Maha Mantra, just these two things, you'll notice a profound change in your body, your mind, your attitude in life. And you'll also notice that you're able to control your senses when previously you might not have been able to in various circumstances. You'll notice that you rise above stress. You see things with a deeper perspective or a longer perspective, and you don't let some of the ups and downs in the world get to you the way they were before. And all this comes from a very basic practice, which sounds altogether too simple, doesn't it? Does it sound too simple? But that's the beauty of it. It's very simple, but if you do it strictly, and this is one of the teachings of our great acharyas or masters in bhakti yoga, he said, take the simple path, but apply it very strictly, and you'll get profound results. And everything I've said tonight is... the concept, you don't have to recall the whole thing, please don't. Just give one concept or idea that may have rested in your heart, stop there, and then you say, I'm taking this with me. Is that fair enough? Do we have a deal? Are you ready? You'll work with me on this? Okay, go.
Hare Krishna, Babaji, Guru Maharaj. Very simple things, but take it very strictly.
Yes. It's a good mantra to keep in one's pocket. Follow the simple path strictly. And one note about practice. Practice is so profound. It's something that humans can do. You can decide to go in a new direction at any time you like. And all you need is two things, knowledge and practice. And a word which goes along with practice very nicely is consistency. It doesn't matter how much you do. It matters how consistent you are. And so if you start with the tiniest practice that you'd like to introduce into your life, for instance, as a new habit, new positive habit, and you start with the smallest increment and then consistently apply it every day, you'll notice profound results over time. Who's next? Yes, right here.
The name of Krishna that you mentioned, Vanchatita?
Vanchatita, yes.
I really connected with the meaning of that name, that he is someone that fulfills desires better than you can ever expect.
Yes, thank you for remembering that. In fact, there's a prayer by a great king named Prithu Maharaj, and he said in his prayer, I really don't know what's good for me, so I'm not going to venture a prayer of my own. My Lord, I'm just like a child. You're like my father. You know what's best for me. Please do what you like. That sounds a little risky, doesn't it? But if we find out, if we study the science of Krishna consciousness, what seemed like a risky proposition in the beginning, we'll understand has no risk whatsoever. In the beginning, spiritual life seems like all risk and no gain. But as one gets more knowledge and one's well-reasoned faith develops, one realizes that it's all gain and no risk. Whereas material endeavors, actually, are all risk and no gain. And you can think about that one on your way home. Okay, yes. Next.
It's thank you for the class, Maharaj. It's when you're reminded that it's almost natural for us to react by saying, oh my God, and that we're constantly praying. So that was a good reminder that we're just doing, by saying Hare Krishna, we're doing the same, but in a more personal way.
Yes. Personal and very deliberate way. And when one deliberates, one can become deliberate. It's spelled the same way, it's just a different form of speech. When you deliberate on something by reading, for instance, this practice of spiritual life, one way to deliberate is to read Bhagavad Gita and discuss it with others who have practiced this for a while. And after deliberating, you become deliberate. And when you practice this deliberately, the effects are immediate. Thank you. He's aware of the 7-second rule.
Actually, you said the word aware. Aware of being aware and not to let the mind do double duty. I like that idea.
Yeah, I learned that from my godbrother Satyadev, who I've been traveling with him in Japan. He teaches meditation in the Bay Area as an entryway to Krishna consciousness. And he gave me a lot of very important tools. That was one of them, to be aware that you're aware. And it's possible to be distracted for an entire day without thinking about oneself, that is, one's spiritual self and spiritual prospects in life. Is that not true? Possible? Then by extension, is it not possible to do it for a week? By extension, is it possible to do it for a month? How about a year? How about 10 years? How about 100 years? How about your whole life? I thought that was covered in 100 years, but just Canadians live longer. And so the Bhagavatam says, better one moment of full awareness of one's higher self than an entire lifetime of distraction and looking outwardly for something that you'll never get, as it's a mirage. You'll never catch up to it. Is there one or two more? Yes, one, two. One, two.
The example of the screw being useless unless it's engaged in service.
Yeah, if you think about it, little screw, you can actually feel sorry for it, and you can empathize. You feel empathy for a screw when you think about how forlorn it looks, but it's unused potential. And this is how very advanced souls see the world. They see the unlimited potential within every living being, and they lived to engage that potential. That's what they do. And that was the mission of our founder, Acharya. He came to America with that vision. He didn't need money. We don't need money to be successful in life. We need the vision that there's potential everywhere that can be engaged in the service of our divine source, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Hare Prasad Prabhu.
I was doing some service late night in
the temple in New York some months ago, and I got locked out of the temple room where I had my beads for the entire night. So it was a nightmarish experience. But I had to learn to chant on my hands for the first time ever to finish my rounds that night. And I realized from today, I did that completely wrong. So you taught me how to do it right. And it's powerful because I can imagine vividly Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I've always wanted to know what was it like when he was chanting. And I've thought about what is it like when he chants on his fingers. And that just left a very vivid impression of samskara in my heart. It also left an impression when you said to take 10 seconds to just see how this has purified your respiratory system, your body. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And that left a real samskara with me, hearing about your nightmare with your beads. That's a very real and visceral kind of experience of being attached to your spiritual practice and all the ways in which you're enacting it in your life. It's very profound, actually. Thank you. Two more. Yes.
I loved your reminder of how valuable it is to actually have a mantra in life.
Yeah. But what do you have to show for yourself? I got a mantra. What do you got?
Something you can take
with you anywhere. It's portable. Even at death. You can take it with you at death. Yes. It's substantial. It's highly substantial. And in the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, receiving a mantra from someone who's has great love for the mantra, who's practiced it through thick and thin, has its own potency. When you meet someone, for instance, who's a musician, who's played on the strings until his or her fingers bled, and who met various teachers here and there and sat with them and studied into the wee hours of the night, and was depressed when they left their music book on the train, and went through all this trouble to come to the point where they're masterful in playing their instrument. If you sit down with that person and you sit before them and you say, please teach me something about music, you'll feel an outpouring from their heart of all the amalgam of everything they've taken in over their life. It's palpable. You can feel it come in almost like downloading from a computer onto your iPhone, and, or I don't want to be biased, or your, what's that other one called? Yeah. So it's a direct experience. And similarly, throughout history, there's been a way in which those who have dedicated their lives to the chanting of the mantra then feel compassion and want to give it to other people. They think, this is the best thing I have. And if you sit with somebody like that and ask them, please would you give me the mantra? Although the mantra is available anywhere. You can get it from a book, and that's rightly so. Anyone should chant the mantra, get it. But especially if you go to someone and you say, please give me the mantra. And they give you the mantra, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates taught, it has a special potency when you do that. Now I've looked again and we're past time. So I want to thank you very much for being with me here today and for your rapt attention. Hare Krishna.
Hey!